bloodshed, fratricide, incest, and magic tricks. There are not many stories in Egyptian mythology, but what they lack in quantity, they certainly make up in quality. If those are the qualities that appeal to you, then you're gonna love this episode on Horus, the chosen one of Egyptian mythology, the king of the gods and the god of kings. This guy endured more suffering and disappointment on his journey to the throne than those families who went to the Willy Wonka experience.
What is that? It's the Ender!
Before we dive into the story of how he earned his title and crown, though, we need to establish who Horus is first, which is not as simple as it sounds, because there's more than one Horus. Horus the Elder and Horus the Younger. Then, just to make it really fun, a few other versions of Horus that only appear in specific scenarios. Right now, I want to focus on the Elder and the Younger, because if it wasn't already confusing enough, these two are as different as they are the same. Part 1. Horus the Elder. Now keep in mind that I am not an expert, and somewhere out there is a professor with suede elbow patches that can explain this better than me, but the way my monkey brain understands it is that Horus the Elder is a version of the god that existed earlier on the timeline. Egyptologists describe him as the first national god of Egypt and patron of the pharaoh, and as centuries went by, the Egyptian kingdom continued to evolve. Rulership changed along with the culture and religious beliefs, and somewhere along the way, Horus went from being Osiris's brother to his son. And so, the younger version was born. The elder Horus never became completely irrelevant. He was still revered and worshipped in certain parts of the kingdom, but other regions accepted Horus the Younger as the new god king and the stories that came with him. But let's get chronological and talk about the elder first. This falcon-headed god was the son of Geb and Nut. He was a primordial being who initiated creation by opening his eyes to dispel the darkness and chaos that consumed the universe. His right eye was the sun, his left eye was the moon, and his wingspan extended across the heavens, earning him the title Lord of the Sky. He was also affiliated with kings, justice, balance, and order. Those of you who are familiar with Egyptian mythology may have already noticed that Horus has some overlap with another primordial deity, Ra. Not only are they both falcon-headed gods, Ra is also credited as a creator, but his kingdom extended beyond the sky. He lorded over the earth and the underworld as well. But if you go far enough along the timeline into Egyptian's new kingdom, Ra gets combined with Amun, while Horus is reimagined as Horus the Younger. Once again, I just want to reiterate that I'm oversimplifying things to a ridiculous degree, because this timeline isn't so much a line as it is a web. But if I don't acknowledge the insane amount of overlap there is between Egyptian deities, I'm gonna get confused comments wondering why I'm attributing certain qualities of Ra to Horus and vice versa. The truth is, it's all a big mess, and the ancient Egyptians weren't Kevin Feige. They were not thinking of this like a cinematic universe where all the pieces fit together perfectly. Like any religion, these myths were open to interpretation and reimagination. With that said, now that you know who the elder Horus is, we can move on to Horus the Younger, and his story is a doozy that you won't soon forget. I'm still reeling from the last time we talked about it, and this time around I've got even more disturbing details for ya. No matter what Horus we talk about though, both figures blessed mankind with plenty of gifts, and today's sponsor Ipsos Aisei can do the exact same thing in exchange for you just sharing your opinions. Wouldn't it be amazing if you could pay for your morning coffee, dog treats, or DLC just by giving your opinion? You're probably like, of course John, but I live in the real world where dreams don't come true. Well, Ipsos Aisei is not a dream, it's real, and they give you real rewards for simply sharing your opinion. By answering their surveys, you can easily win points toward gift cards for your favorite stores, Target, Walmart, Home Depot, Starbucks, Dunkin' Donuts. I personally went with an Amazon gift card as my reward because Amazon sells everything, and I bought my dogs some delicious treats so they know how much I love them. These are simple surveys too. Not only do they relate to my interests so they never get boring, but they're also short enough that I can fly through one whenever I have downtime. Like when I was waiting for last week's episode to render, I just opened up Ipsos Aisei and earned myself some points. Hit the link below and you can start earning rewards with Ipsos Aisei today. Part 2. Horus the Younger. The story of Horus the Younger's ascension to the throne may be the most famous story in all of Egyptian myth, but there are a ton of details that get left out of retellings because modern society has conditioned us to feel uncomfortable when discussing certain topics. Fortunately for us, I don't have to make eye contact with you when I tell this story. I just gotta look at a camera, so we can cover all the messed up minutiae. Though I may have to speak in euphemisms so we can get past YouTube censors. So for those who don't know the story of Osiris and Set, you can listen to the full breakdown of that myth in my episode on Osiris. But today, I'm going to give you the extremely short version. To put it simply, Set, the god of chaos, was jealous over his brother Osiris getting to rule over the ancient world and hook up with both of their sisters, Isis and Nephthys. So he chopped Osiris into a bunch of little pieces and scattered them across Egypt. Osiris's wife manages to recover all of his pieces and resurrect him for a short while, but ultimately, since Osiris had died, he had to return to the land of the dead. Before leaving, though, he told Isis not to worry, because during his short time in the corporeal realm, he impregnated her with a son, and that son would go on to dethrone his evil uncle Set and save the world from his chaotic rulership. As you can imagine, his son was Horus, and the story of his childhood can vary wildly from source to source. Sometimes Isis goes into hiding to raise him, other times she gives him to a serpent goddess named Wajet to raise him in secret so his uncle Set doesn't track him down and kill him, and in other instances, she hides him in a papyrus bush where he's nursed by a divine cow. You may have noticed this statue of Isis nursing child Horus shows him with a human head instead of his falcon one. That's another version-dependent detail. In some cases, Horus is born looking fully human, and in others, Isis feels his beak poking her in the womb. Just depends on your source and when and where that source came from. Over the next few decades, Horus grows into an honorable and justice-oriented young god, and so he, his mother, and their supporters plead with the Aeneid, a governing body of 9 gods, to allow him to take his rightful place on the throne. As you might expect, though, Uncle Set wasn't just going to let them take the throne that he killed his own flesh and blood for, so he makes his case to the Aeneid as well. And unfortunately for Horus, Set has a powerful ally, the sun god Ra, who's acting as the supreme judge. Because one of Set's main responsibilities was to ride on Ra's sky barge and defend reality against Apophis, also known as Apep, a primordial snake that embodies disorder and darkness. So when Set pointed out that only he was strong enough to keep Apophis at bay, Ra backed him up because he'd witnessed their fights on multiple occasions, and they got wild. Unable to come to a unanimous vote, the Divine Nine decide that uncle and nephew will compete in a contest to determine the rightful ruler. And this is where things get weird. Bizarrely, for their contest, Set suggests that he and Horus both turn into hippos and stay underwater for 3 months, and whoever comes up for air first loses. Horus agrees to this and the contest begins, but after some time passes, Isis realizes that Set could pull his usual evil shenanigans while hiding under the water, so she tries to impale Set with a spear. Apparently, this contest didn't have a ref, because I'm pretty sure that would be cheating. I guess that doesn't matter though, because Isis actually missed her first attempt and stabbed Horus instead. Then she magically removed the spear and impaled Set with it, only for Set to use their brother-sister bond to convince her to heal him up as well. The contest ultimately ends in a stalemate, and Horus is furious at his mom for not taking out Set when she had the chance. And in his fury, he actually chops off her head. Then he sojourns into the desert alone, leaving her headless body to turn into a statue. When Ra finds out what Horus has done, it's his turn to be infuriated, and so he orders a search for the young god. Set is the first to find him, lying under a tree in a desert oasis, and he sneak attacks his nephew. Horus manages to get a few good hits in, and even tears off Set's testicles in some versions, but Set ultimately wins the fight by gouging out one or both of Horus's eyes and leaving him for dead. This myth is the origin of the Eye of Horus, an important Egyptian symbol representing good health and protection. In some cases, where the elder and younger Horus are syncretized, this story was used to explain why the sun is so much brighter than the moon. Because remember, they were thought of as Horus's eyes. Lucky for Horus, though, he makes a full recovery thanks to the goddess Hathor rubbing gazelle milk into his eyes. Or in a different version, Thoth heals him up by using 11 magical herbs and spices. Either way, it isn't long before Ra learns about this encounter, and now enraged at both wannabe kings, he declares they have to make peace with each other, because the fighting is getting on everyone's nerves and distracting the gods from handling other important issues. Set, playing his usual trickster role, appears to accept the Aeneid's orders for reconciliation and invites his nephew into his home for dinner and drinks. Horace accepts, gorges on food, then passes out on the couch, much to Set's delight. This is where the euphemisms come in. Set takes out his trouser snake and injects some of his venom into Horace from behind. Then, a few days later, he reveals this heinous act to the Aeneid, saying that he dominated his nephew and was therefore entitled to the throne. As you can imagine, the Aeneid was both disgusted and angry.
Oh! Ew!
Dude!
What the fuck?
Not only had these two not resolved their issues like they promised they would, they were performing filthy, incestuous acts on each other. Funnily enough, though, they weren't disgusted with Set for dominating Horus. Rather, they shamed Horace for allowing his uncle to do that.
Ha! Gay!
Horace couldn't help but laugh at their insults, though, because he had an ace up his sleeve that none of them knew about. He told the Aeneid that Set was the one who was dominated, and if they wanted to find out the truth, they simply had to summon each of their venoms to see where they came out of. The ruling gods did just that, and to their amazement, Set's venom floated out of the nearby river, proving that Horace was never really dominated. Meanwhile, Horace's venom shot out of Set's head, showing that he was the submissive one. But how did Horace manage to pull off this switcheroo? Well, it turns out he was only pretending to be asleep when Set squirted on him, and instead of letting it go inside him, Horace caught it with his hand. He then brought the handful of baby batter to his mother Isis, who had apparently forgiven him for the whole beheading thing, and together they devised a plan. Firstly, Isis chopped off Horace's contaminated hand and threw it in the river. Then she used magic to make him a new one. Next, Horace gave her some of his own baby batter and she spread it on the lettuce growing in Set's garden, knowing that this was his favorite snack. This resulted in Set eating the salty, zinky lettuce without realizing what he was really ingesting and ultimately embarrassing himself in front of the governing council of gods. Unwilling to accept defeat, Set challenged Horus to one last contest, racing handcrafted boats made of solid stone, and this one would be for all the marbles. At this point, Horus is getting a little tired of constantly competing with his uncle, but he relents, and the two get to work making their boats. But as where Set chops off a mountain peak and molds it into a boat, Horus gets tricksy and crafts a boat out of pine wood, then covers it with a layer of limestone plaster so it appears to be made of solid rock. And as you can imagine, this contest doesn't last long. The two boats launch and Set's immediately sinks while Horace's effortlessly floats. And when Set sees this, he freaks out, turns into a hippo, and smashes Horace's boat into pieces. Now, would you believe me if I said Horace still wasn't named king after this? I agree. It's getting a little ridiculous at this point. Even if Set was technically a stronger god, Horace has been able to outsmart him time and time again. So why are the Aeneid still split on this issue? Well, unfortunately for Horus, the loudest voice of dissent was Set's superdelegate, Ra himself. And to settle this dispute once and for all, Ra wrote a letter to Osiris seeking counsel. As you would expect, Osiris was a strong supporter of his son Horus and not the brother who murdered him for his throne. So he sent his vote to the Aeneid along with a good old-fashioned threat. You see, at this point, Osiris had fully embraced his position as the Lord of the Underworld, and he made it clear that he would use this to his advantage by sending out hordes of bloodthirsty undead beings to rip out the heart of anyone who disobeyed his wishes. Considering that Osiris was proof that gods were not immortal and could be killed, the Aeneid found this to be a viable threat. I mean, a convincing argument. So they finally relented and blessed Horus with the position that he was born for, donning him with a red and white crown to signify the unification of all of Egypt. Meanwhile, Set, who had been sitting on the throne since he murdered Osiris 80 years ago, was forced to accept defeat and relinquish it. He did get a consolation prize, though. Ra announced that Set would be joining him in the sky and that his voice would be the sound of thunder, which is quite the demotion, but still pretty cool. Now, at risk of making this episode even more messy, I want to add there are many variations of Horus's ascension and feud with Set. For example, Egyptologists have found art depicting a peaceful resolution to their feud, where the two are tying together the plants that represent Egypt's upper and lower kingdoms. This version is believed to be depicting Horus the Elder, though, not Horus the Younger, meaning that Horus and Set are brothers in this portrayal. Alternatively, there are variants where that ridiculous contest doesn't happen at all. Instead, Horus and Set battle armies for the throne. Similar to their fight in the contest myth, this battle results in Horus losing his eye and Set losing his balls. Chances are there are still more variants out there, so if you've come across one that I didn't mention, leave it in a comment down below. But now that Horus has his crown and control over all of Egypt, one question remains. How did the ancient Egyptians worship him? So with Horus being the king of the gods and ruler of this realm, you can imagine that he was a pretty big deal to the Egyptians. We don't have a ton of information about how they worshipped him, but the little bit that we do know paints a pretty clear picture. For instance, the pharaohs who ruled over Egypt were believed to be gods themselves. There's debate over to what extent, like the ancient people probably realized the pharaoh was human, but they also understood he had a connection with the divine because of his position as king. With this in mind, pharaohs were seen as descendants of Ra, the sun god, and as embodying the qualities of Horus, who embodied kingship itself. As one of their most significant deities, the Egyptians partied hard in Horus's honor. The Feast of Victory was celebrated every year in the region of Edfu in southern Egypt at the Temple of Horus. The main event was a theatrical recreation of Horus's battle with Set. Not the extended version that we covered, but the short version where the two just get an army and start brawling. Horus was represented by the pharaoh, or a priest acting as a proxy, and he would use a harpoon to beat the hell out of a hippo effigy, though I'm gonna choose to believe he dueled the real hippopotamus, and there's nothing you can do to stop me. After the dramatic performance concluded, the festival attendees would devour a massive hippopotamus-shaped cake, something they believed endowed them with Set's power. Now, like all gods, Horus received his fair share of sacrifices and temples erected in his honor, but what's really unique about his worship is the Eye of Horus. It was inscribed on everything from boats to amulets, with an impressive number of mummies being found rocking these things. Wearing the Eye of Horus was like the ancient equivalent of wearing a mask during COVID. Not because the pharaoh issued a mandate forcing people to wear them, he didn't, but many saw them as an effortless way to protect themselves against the forces of evil. So in addition to being a fashion piece, carvings of it could also be found in temples, on boats, on weapons, and in the homes of Egyptian citizens. For a hot second, I thought it would make a pretty cool tattoo, but then I found out that Drake has one. And that's like finding out your grandma has one. It's just kinda lame now. You know what? I shouldn't have said that. That was an insult to grandmas. At least grandmas are capable of being cool. No worries though, because I have a much doper custom Egyptian tattoo that I like more. Kinda weird that I got this, then immediately took a 6-month break from Egyptian content, but hey, I'm back now, and I want to hear your thoughts on Horus's mythology. If you enjoyed this podcast and want more entertaining, educational, and very messed up content sent to your device every Friday, remember to sacrifice those 5-star and follow buttons to the algorithm gods. I'll see you all again next week when I dive into some deeply disturbing Celtic folklore. Until then, my name is John Solo, and remember, John shot first.